Okay, how did you do the flag trick?
We're not gonna tell you that.
Fine. So if Annabeth goes out there and says that you did not burn a flag last night, no one can refute that.
Except the 100 people who saw them burn a flag or think that's what they saw.
You tell me, Charlie, did we burn a flag or did we just banish a flag in a patriotic flash of fireworks?
Don't know.
What's the difference?
Well, there's a big difference politically.
Why? I mean, what if we burned a flag not in protest, but in celebration of the very freedoms that allow us to burn a flag? The freedoms that everyone who has ever worked in this magnificent building has pledged to preserve and protect.
Did you go to law school?
No. Clown school.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey, everybody. It's Two Magicians, One Mic.
It really is.
We're back. Simon's back from the brink of China.
Not just the brink. I went, like, waist, neck, head deep into China.
No, Simon, you went back to China.
Why? I think we're all curious about. I feel like a character in a Robert Ludlum novel. Is that, it's always the grizzled ex-special forces guy who's quit and now is legit, but then gets pulled back in for one last mission. That's how I feel every time a China thing comes up. I'm like, oh, God, I'm going back in.
It's a very specific reference.
Yeah. I used to read Robert Ludlum novels used to be my go-to for airplane reading. They're light, they're absorbing, they're not too complex, but they just got too repetitive. They were all too formulaic. Mm-hmm. Lee Child, Jack Reacher, way better. Formulaic, but different enough that each one still feels different.
Interesting.
That's my pro tip for a lot of airplane travel.
And we should just preface this episode with the closure.
Yeah.
Of the House of Magic, and that is the theme of this episode today.
The House of Magic is dead. Long live the House of Magic.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Kind of subtly just vanished into the infinite abyss the way they did it.
It was October 8th, I think, mm-hmm. Unless I got my dates wrong, was the last date.
I think so.
Very recently. Yeah. And just suddenly disappeared. And it makes sense. I mean, in hindsight, Macau as a whole is experiencing an economic downturn at the moment. It's not really a downturn so much as just not the insane uptick that it was experiencing over, the few years back. China put in some slightly tighter visa laws, so it was slightly harder for mainlanders to get to Macau. Some tighter anti-money laundering reporting laws that even if you're not money laundering, were still made it a bit more annoying to bring money out of it and so on. So Macau as a whole was taking a bit of a hit. The Studio City Casino was having it a bit tougher, and so it's not surprising that it was tough times for a lot of places in Macau.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, well, when we had 17 people in the audience, some shows.
Yeah. But it sucks. It was such a part of our lives. It's the reason why everyone I meet thinks that this is, they go, oh, I listen to your podcast, Simon. I'm like, what? Sorry? Yeah, Two Magicians, One Mic. I'm like, that's not my podcast. That's Nick's podcast. I've just been on it a lot.
I've said this before. You're on. You've increased the download. So sure. I'll give you.
But that was all because of House of Magic.
I'll give you.
Where the legendary Macau sessions happened.
Yeah. But you've been traveling. You literally just flew in from China yesterday, and you're on jet lag time.
Yeah. Yeah, I got in, it's Sunday morning. It's October. It's 2017, I think.
I think so.
It's Sunday morning. I flew in yesterday morning from Beijing. I did a gig last night. So I flew in, unpacked my suitcase, slept for a couple of hours, went to a gig. It was a really, really fun gig, a big Halloween party. Did it. It was great. Now I've woken up miraculously. We're recording this. And then tomorrow morning, I fly out to a cruise ship gig. So I'm in town for 2 days. I don't even know where I'm flying to for the cruise ship. I haven't checked yet. It doesn't really make a difference. I just fly wherever it is. I think it might be Brazil. I'm not sure. Or that might be the next one. I really don't. I always apply the Sherlock Holmes principle of that was in A Study in Scarlet, the first book. And at one point in the book, Watson is horrified to discover that his new housemate, Holmes, despite being apparently intelligent, doesn't even know that the Earth orbits around the sun. He has no idea of this modern cosmological fact. And Holmes replies that to the effect that it doesn't make a lick of difference to his work or his life, whether the sun orbits the Earth, orbits the sun, or they both orbit a giant, unicorn. He doesn't burden his mind with unnecessary information that wouldn't alter any of his decisions or actions. And which is an unusual thing. But right now I've got so much crap I have to deal with and keep track of that knowing where this cruise ship is going out of is not particularly relevant information. It wouldn't change really. I will check when I'm packing to know whether to take warm clothing or cool clothing. But other than that, it's not going to change any decisions I'm going to make. I still go to LAX and I get on a flight and I do a gig and I get paid and then I come back.
It's true. You're just doing the same thing. You just
exactly. So where it's going from actually isn't relevant data.
Yeah. I get a ship this week and I get one in a week after that. And yeah, the most important thing for me is just getting on the ship.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's what you're being paid to do. That's the job. And
that's the scariest part about doing – anybody who wants to do cruise ships, just know that is the biggest obstacle. Because you think it'd be pretty simple. You think getting people on the ship would be simple. But as we've learned from your story, you drove into the darkness of China for 5 hours.
Me and China, why? What keeps happening? What is it?
I just love that we have this kind of we have like this texting thing of you'll send me – excuse me, I'm doing adjustments with the audio here. We'll just send photos to one another that only we would get of with the caption China.
Yeah.
And it's – I'm sure maybe from a distance it's a little bit racist, but it's not. It's a cultural thing.
It's really not.
Experience.
It's a cultural thing. Yeah. You know, it was funny on this last gig. It was myself, Andrew Goldenhirsch, and Dave Cox in China.
You got to start surrounding yourself with more talented people.
You know what? They were both fantastic. It actually ended up being an amazing team.
They're both amazing. I saw Andrew Goldenhirsch a couple weeks ago at the castle, and it's one of the few. I've been meaning to tell him this, but. It's one of the few times I walked out of there going, oh, man, it felt really good to see that show.
Yeah.
He's just so, so good.
Yeah, and it's, absolute you can't consummate put it to words. And we were there and started noticing, again, this is where it gets to race versus culture. It's always weird wondering if people have listened to the Macau sessions, they already understand the context. But if, say, someone's listening in for the first time, they're going, why are these guys so harsh on China? What's going on? You know, people don't know the context. But we noticed the rare thing when you see Caucasian people who've grown up in China.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we experience.
No, it's rare. It's obviously a tiny minority of the population. But it's that same sort of, like, dead stare of lack of critical thinking skills. And so on. It's weird.
So it's not genetics. It's purely cultural.
Yeah, purely cultural.
I guess my sister is a prime example of that. She's adopted from China. But I just remember you saying the first thing you noticed about her was the way she moved. And you're like, oh, she's American.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. And race has nothing to do with anything. It's all culture. And that's why it's absolutely literally not racism. It's profound cultural bias.
Sure.
Which is a real thing and very relevant.
And I think that's something just as a whole – humans have to learn, you know, because people are so quick to go, Chinese or white or black.
No, it's where you grew up.
It's
makes
purely,
a difference.
Circumstances.
Yeah, and obviously it's you more than anything else and your heart and soul and spirit. But it's, you know, where you grew up, the family you grew up in, the environment you grew up in shapes your belief and your thinking with culture, religion, and all the things that actually affect who you are and what you're like more likely to care about. I mean,
sure.
You know, I believe in freedom and compassion and free thought and critical thinking, but those arbitrary cultural values that were imprinted onto me as a child, those aren't my values. Those are the culture I was immersed in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it.
I don't think those are going to be imprinted in your DNA.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, I think they're pretty good values, but of course I would. They're my values. I grew up with them.
That's an interesting statement right there. I think they're pretty good, but that's a fascinating thought right there in itself.
Yeah.
But okay, so you went back to China.
Went back to China. Got dragged back in. Got out. Project went well. It was really good. Went successfully. Got back. Yeah, and so I'm in town for 2 days.
Roger.
Before bouncing out again. It was a weird time because it was one of those odd gigs that it was a consulting project, a creative design project for essentially a science educational-themed theme park was the
basic
idea.
And naturally, they brought in magicians.
Well, with a heavy magic basis to it. The idea was to make kind of a quote-unquote Hogwarts of science, where you're teaching kids science through magic and entertainment, which I think is a potentially fantastic idea.
Brilliant idea.
But I got the call maybe 4 days before it started. It was, again, with China, so many things are last minute, so many things are unexpected. You just never really quite know what's going to happen. and got the call going, hey, can you come to China for 12 days in a week or two? Like, I can cancel some things. What's the thing? And yeah, it's the thing in China, as you know, even legitimate deals still feel like scams up front. They're going, yeah, we've got the plane tickets. Yeah, don't worry. We'll get you. We've got them. We'll just send them to you later. Yeah, this sounds like bullshit.
Yeah.
And then, no, they actually did. They weren't lying. They really had the plane tickets. They just didn't send them to you for whatever reason or some China-related reason, and it turns out to be legit but still triggers all your scam danger warnings,
even if
it's legit.
Well, yeah, just going, when we had to go to Macau, just the background checks we had to go through and the police – to go down to the police station, get like fingerprints and all these crazy things, and yeah, you're just going through your head of this isn't real.
Yeah, is this something's a real thing? And ironically, that's just because House of Magic was doing it by the book. They were doing it legit because it was a proper business visa to be employed and all that jazz. Whereas, you know, as we know, I mean, for this trip, I managed to get a Chinese business visa. We got a letter from the company, but most people in China are working on tourist visas. It's the Wild West out there. It's just
yes,
it goes. But House of Magic, it's House over. End of an era.
And I was just talking about how I anytime you see somebody who's also done this particular gig, you kind of gravitate towards them and go, "Hey, you did this too." And I won't name names, but I was talking to somebody, and they had like a really positive experience. It sounded like, and not that we didn't.
No,
we had a good.
It was definitely 100% worth doing.
It was a life changing. 100%
glad I did it.
But
it was a challenge.
It was a challenge for sure. And these people were like, "Yeah, it's awesome." And my tone was a little bit negative as I was talking. Didn't mean to.
Your tone, Nick, negative? No.
Yes, I know. I'm such a upbeat, positive person. But you don't understand. I'm really working on that. Oh, hang on. I just flew off my monitor. I talk so loud. I am consciously working on that, thanks to you and the teachings of Rocco Solano, of Zen philosophy. I say that as a joke, but it's very truthful.
Oh, that Rocco episode. It was amazing.
It was. If you haven't listened to the Rocco episode, go back. And
it's worth it.
My favorite part is when the cleaning lady walks in. And cut? No, we just leave it going.
Because China.
You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That could be our best stuff, and I think it was.
Yeah. I've forgotten about that.
I lost my train of thought. But anyway, just how different people perceive things differently. And I hope we don't come across as like bashing China or bashing a House of Magic. It was more hopefully a celebration of the House of Magic.
Completely. But it's sort of like it's a bit like the way people talk about the magic industry, like a big, great, dysfunctional family, but you still love each other.
Yeah.
And House of Magic was exhausting and arduous and challenging, but like the more time passes between it, the more – you know, I was always happy to do it. It was a great experience. It was a huge opportunity. And the more I realize what an amazing experience it was, because every time I do shows now, I can feel that beaten-in experience, like being tempered on that anvil of 6 to 8 damn shows a day for some of the toughest, least responsive crowds in the world.
Totally, yeah.
And just how much that forged, just, you know, tempered my magic and performance skills. Mm-hmm. And I can feel it now. Like, that gig sort of single-handedly made me into a grizzled performance veteran.
Yeah.
In a way that it's not like I was inexperienced before, but this was it was a whole new ballgame.
And I never really noticed that in my experience until I was recently going back working on some video promo for stuff and just going through old videos, because I like to keep an archive of as much video of my show, even if I'm never going to use it. I like to just have it on a hard drive. Mm. And I was going back, going through stuff. And it's funny how at the time you're like, yeah, this is good. This is great. And then I go back watching a video from a year ago. I'm like, this is terrible. Mm. This is crap. And I'm just much more critical. And it's funny how I point to that gig for making my movements more specific, making my thought process more specific. You don't realize it at the time, but that repetition of, you know, something like that really is a strong strong experience to go through, and it affects you. It affects your performance ability in ways you wouldn't have thought.
Well, it's also, I mean, with any kind of design, engineering, development, the tighter and quicker your iteration cycle is, the quicker you get better. Because, you know, you iterate, test, reiterate, retest, and so on. And with that was the tightest iteration cycle I've ever had. Six to eight times a day. Bam, 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 bam. Again, 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 again. So each time you make the tiniest tweak, you see how it works. You try it again. Does it work? Does it not work? And I now find myself missing it because I'm now still working on new material constantly. Whereas now my iteration cycle is so much longer. You know, I can go to the castle each night, but I'll be able to do at most a couple of sets, maybe three. And that's on nights that
And
I
you're
go.
Performing for really easy audiences.
Exactly. In a totally
so you don't
different
know
environment.
If it's actually working.
Yeah. Yeah, and so and I find myself wishing I could kind of go to the House of Magic or somewhere like that and work a week there, just to like really beat in some material. Mm-hmm. Because now I know what that can do. I've seen it now and experienced it. The power of that level of rapid iteration in shows.
You don't know the power of the dark side. In many ways,
anyway. Yeah. I hope it reopens somewhere. It would be great. I don't know if
well,
there's plans
Franz
or not.
Franz just announced Magic Planet, which
oh, really?
Is a theme
Wait, what?
Park, a magic theme themed theme park, I think, in Bangkok.
Okay.
They put
That's
that out.
Cool.
They put a press release out. So I don't,
I'd be,
it
I'd
says
be down.
2018 it's opening. I don't know.
I'd be down.
We're going to have to knock on Franz's door and go, hey, remember
the,
us?
The Bangkok sessions.
The Bangkok sessions.
Bangkok is in Thailand, right?
Thailand.
That's that'd be embarrassing if I got that wrong. Says the allegedly cosmopolitan man.
I was
going to
say,
world.
Out of all the people in the world I know, I can't believe you just questioned that.
Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute. I know this better.
So look forward to that.
Yeah, I've never been to Thailand. It's still on
I
the list.
Either.
I've heard good things. Thai food is my second favorite cuisine after Japanese.
We get Thai food like once a week here in LA. Although there's a Thai food restaurant on every corner, essentially.
Yeah.
Look forward to that. So who knows?
Spirit will live on.
If I can talk about me for a second.
Sure.
Because I never talk about myself.
How about you, Nick?
This week has been such a wonderful metaphor for what it's like to be a performer in LA. Mm. Because I did, four gigs this week. Three of them were all last minute. All booked at, no joke, about 4 p.m.
Whoa, that is last minute.
With shows being at 8 p.m. Sunday was for a new group of young guys at the Three Clubs in Hollywood, which is a cool swanky joint. The new Bad Boys of Magic, they have a show going on monthly Sundays. Definitely check it out. It was a lot of fun.
Some of those guys who did that show in The Fringe recently.
We did The Fringe with them. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
They were really good, nice guys.
I haven't seen them yet.
I got the email like at 4:15. Mm. Hey, are you available tonight? It was my off day, but yeah. And then Tuesday, last minute, hey, we need somebody at Comedy Magic Club. Okay, great. Friday, I saw there was a Brooklyn show, so I bugged Erica. I'm like, hey, can I do a small set? She's like, great. And then yesterday was a house party. And which one of those, Simon, do you think paid the most money?
out of those, just because I know, it's almost certainly got to be the house party.
Well done.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I know what Comedy Magic Club pays. And it's, and Comedy Magic Club, I do in a heartbeat. It's one of the best. And that's this actually gets into a really interesting dichotomy in professional magic and most other
variety
that's arts.
Why I bring it up.
Yeah,
because
joy gigs versus money gigs.
The only gigs I really want, and I had a great time, and the audience was wonderful last night at the house party. But to me, doing a house party, and I was telling this to a friend of mine yesterday, I get more nervous for those because it's such an intimate setting. Yeah. I get more nervous for those than doing an 800-seat theater on a cruise ship. Just because even if the show goes well, I literally ended go, thanks, and I'm standing in their living room and I have nowhere to go. Yeah. I can't walk off stage. I can't – like I need to leave, but I can't. So it's so personal and so intimate. Going back to pleasure gigs versus paid gigs.
Paid gigs. And something like the Comedy Magic Club or the Magic Castle, joys to perform at. Mm-hmm. Just absolute, it's fun.
And you've done Brooklyn too, right?
Yeah, and Brooklyn as well.
You're performing for guys like Paul Rubens and Conan O'Brien who are just there watching a show.
Out.
And you're making no money, but you don't care.
Yeah, you don't care. You're doing it because it's what you actually love. And that's that thing, that insidious, insidious saying, find a job you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
I'll punch that person in the nuts.
Yep. Because if they're, whichever non-magicians are listening to this are going, what? Wait, what do you mean? And it's because when you get into, say, something like magic, you love, crafting a performance and delivering it in a way that you've worked on and perfected and so on. But then when you do a professional gig, whether it's a house party or a corporate event, you are inevitably doing it in a non-ideal situation, in a non-ideal way, in a way that kind of warps your vision and you have to just adapt it to some weird, messed up thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the gigs like Comedy Magic Club or Brooklyn or the Castle, you can then – those are the places where you can do it the way you want to do it in the environment that you've dreamed of for the kinds of people that you enjoy performing for.
And you're performing in kind of like these sacred spaces, you know, like Comedy Magic Club. You name the comedian, Robin Williams, you know, anybody.
Everyone. I'm losing, literally anyone. Name
literally
a good
anybody.
Comedian.
They've been there. They've been there. Last week, what's his name from Monty Python popped in when Joel Lord was doing it. He posted the photo. Just John Cleese. Just because that's what happens.
Yeah.
And so you take it. You don't mind that you're making less money.
No.
You're just like, this is such a special thing. This is what I've worked so hard to be a part of.
And it's the cruel irony that it microeconomics, supply and demand. The places that are good to work at don't need to pay as much because people will work at them anyway because they're great.
Yeah, and also like to keep a place like that going that seats 300-something people serving dinner, you know, paying the wait staff, paying the tech staff, all these managers, all that. You can't pay someone thousands of dollars nightly to perform there.
Also, I mean, a place like that is paying six performers a night.
Yeah.
Whereas a house party is paying one performer a year on average.
Which
is the number of magicians hired by people on it, you know.
This is me just being a jerk. pulling up to this house yesterday. I mean, lovely people. The show was great. Everybody was so appreciative. And that's always helpful when you do a house party. But, you know, I gave them a little bit of a discount because I said, this is my price. They're like, oh, we can't afford this. I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm not working that day. I can do it for this. I'm like, okay, great. Yeah, they thought it over. Awesome. You pull up. It was literally on a mountain in Palos Verdes, giant house, pool, edgeless pool, seeking. You can just see into the distance forever. And I'm like, you couldn't spend the extra couple bucks I was asking for. Okay, it's fine. It's fine.
I know.
That's all. The only thing that's running through my head the whole time.
I mean, but that's its own little.
That's me being
universe,
a dick,
isn't it?
That's me being a jerk.
Of working out perceived value versus actual value versus some people just. And whether it was that they just didn't see the magic, you know, they had an amount that they felt that was worth to them.
Yeah.
Because look, I could pay $15 for a Snickers bar, but I'm not going to because I'm that's not what that's worth to me.
And I think that's what it comes down to. Yeah.
You're just like seeing that as – which is
I know this
that,
product is good, but
– but how much do I feel this product is a fair market price for me for this product? And that's one of the things that we all as professionals tackle constantly. Every magician knows that. You're trying to find a way to increase your perceived value to people, and that's so utterly subjective, particularly something like magic that isn't a commodity market. It's not a thing that everyone is buying and selling constantly. So
especially here where there's so much competition where you can you have to have a competitive price even if you have all these crazy credits on your resume. It almost doesn't matter in some ways.
Yeah.
But that's sometimes a good thing because, you know, I had the thought in my head and I just lost it. But I don't deserve the amount of money I was asking. I don't feel I deserve that, but I felt like I could get it because I know that's what other people are charging.
And who deserves anything?
Exactly.
When you get down to it, let's get philosophical. What does it mean
to separate the business aspect of it from the personal aspect of it?
Well, also, does anyone deserve anything? The universe doesn't owe anyone anything.
No.
It's all just what
I didn't deserve
happen.
Any of the gigs I got this week, and yet I performed at three of my favorite places on the planet, you know, and just by circumstance, you know.
Yeah, deservedness. What's the word? What's the adjective for that? I don't know. Like justice isn't a thing that exists in the universe. It's a thing that humans invent.
Interesting.
It's a concept that we make up. And it's still a valuable one that I think is important. I think, you know, sort of justice is something worth striving to create, but it's not an intrinsic property of the universe.
Have you seen Patton Oswalt's new special?
No.
He ends with just this beautiful anecdote about, you know, because he lost his wife and he just talks about how she would always say, the universe is chaos, or you know, things are chaos. Just the only thing you control is kindness. You know, it's chaos, be kind. That's how he ends it. And it's such a simple but beautiful way to look at the world. And it's true. It's the only thing you can control is your reaction. I don't know how we got here from a magic
we tend to go there.
It's 23 minutes and we always get to this point.
It gets existential.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, I finally finished Rick and Morty season 3.
Congratulations.
I mean, that was what we were watching. It was what we were bonding over in Macau, I remember, because it was so relevant. It's that complete chaos and arbitrary nonsensicalness of the universe was very relevant to us.
For Halloween, my wife and I dressed. I was Morty, and Kristen, who's short, she's like, you know, what is she, 4.5 feet? No, she's not even 5 feet. She played Tiny Rick, and we went to the castle Halloween party. And the funny part, there was a whole bunch of Ricks there. So we wanted to get a photo together of me, Morty, with a bunch of different Ricks from alternate universes.
It's amazing.
We didn't end up making that happening, which I was sad about, but because we couldn't find a whole bunch at once. But it was if you want to see the photo, go online. I think it came out pretty well. But yeah, that's talk about. I mean, just going once again, going back to Rick and Morty. Talk about taking your time. Crafting. They took a lot of time crafting season 3 just because they're like, we want to do it right. And I will say, there was 10 episodes. I would say 7 of them are just amazing, dead on, brilliant stories.
Stone cold genius brilliance.
Just genius. And I think that just came from taking their time with it and knowing the product that they wanted to create and having the luxury of being able to do that.
Yeah, it's like, have you noticed this whole thing on the internet about how a whole lot of Rick and Morty fans have sort of gained a reputation for being complete dipshits?
That's like about,
acting,
I can see that.
Acting like idiots and being really, really, being really high and mighty about, oh, you have to be really intelligent to get it. And it's like, for fuck's sake, guys.
Yeah.
Stop ruining it for everybody.
Well, it's that, it's a little bit of that hipster, it's that nerd hipster mentality. Yeah. And I spent a lot of time with people like that in Japanese class in high school. All super nice people, but you could tell there was, and I talk about this with my sister actually quite a bit too, of because she's just a really smart person, and I'm like, you're gonna struggle a lot in life just because you're such an extra intelligent person. You get things quicker, and I think that's where some of that comes from. People nerdier, intelligent types, like, this is their thing to be good at and thing to gloat about.
Yeah, you know? But you know what? Fandom is not a thing worth gloating about. Knowing about a thing and or consuming a thing, I don't think that's gloat-worthy. That's just a thing that you're doing nothing. You're literally doing nothing except observing and consuming a thing.
And I think that's why I struggle with Comic-Cons sometimes and fandom.
Me too.
And, like, I'm a massive Star Wars fan, and I love it to death.
I read all the comics.
Yeah, and we
But
have...
I don't feel the need to jerk off about it with a bunch of other enthusiasts.
Yeah, I just – I don't – and I'm not judging it, but it's something I don't
– I'm judging it.
You can judge it.
And that makes me a bad person. I get it. I'm not really judging it. I know that's wrong.
Because I think – I mean, especially people who do, like, cosplay and stuff, that's kind of their culture they made up. Yeah. This is their thing they've – created and
With cosplay, like, at least you're doing something creative and constructive at
totally,
that point.
Totally, yeah.
And like I'm a fan of lots of stuff. We'll stop being nerd. Like, look at us. We're massive Rick and Morty fans. We talk about our appreciation of it all the time, but I don't think that gives me value that I appreciate that. That's just something I happen to do and enjoy. It's
and
not
I think
like,
that's the thing I struggle with gamers and video games too. I do play video games, but it's not like a cultural need for me. If I don't play video games for a week, I don't feel like I've lost anything.
Well, I guess I don't really identify as anything in particular. I think that the idea of labeling yourself by your tribe of what you're into, I don't think is a healthy human trait, really. I get why we do it. I get why we have the instinct to do so. I get its evolutionary and sociological importance and so on. But it's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being completely hypocritical. That's possible, too.
We probably are, but that's fine.
I mean, look, as long as we strive, right?
We do magic tricks.
Trying to do better. Trying to do better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's
wow. That's our, it's got even more existential.
That's our douchebag commentary.
Yeah.
At 27 minutes in.
Well, at least striving for self-awareness, right? It's important. Never assuming that you're in the right. I think that's the biggest thing. Is don't assume you're in the right. Always look for ways you're probably wrong about everything.
Yeah,
that's how most people are. Present company.
It's amazing how much that opens up, especially on stage too. If you're just, it's harder for when I'm doing silent stuff because I really enjoy that. I get it. I'm in on the joke too element of it. But it's amazing how just quickly that allows the audience to gravitate to you. Because if you're someone who's taking them, and there's nothing wrong with taking what you do seriously, but if there's, I don't know, if there's not enough of a nudge, wink, hey, I get that this is ridiculous, but still I'm going to fool you, or I'm still going to impress
you. Well, I think
there's
a happy medium. You want to take it seriously, but not too seriously.
Yeah.
It's like all those, whoever's quote it was, about things to be made simple as possible, but no simpler. et cetera, just all those things about finding that right balance of how much of whatever quantity should it have to be ideal and then not giving it more or less than that.
Mm-hmm.
Did we talk about the – we've done so many episodes now. I can't remember what we've talked about and what we haven't.
I don't listen to these.
Did we talk about the really weird compliment Johann Stahl gave me once?
Mm-mm.
So we all get compliments, right? And it's great. And it's always to be celebrated, never to be taken for granted. It's a beautiful thing. But they do blur together after a while. Mm-hmm. It's, oh, my God, your show was so great. Oh, my God, I loved your show. Cool. Yes, thank you. And you say – and thank you is always sincere. And I know a lot of people struggle to take compliments. It's a thing some people need to work on. And I had to do that myself in the early days. Of like, I was – when you weren't happy with the show but someone loved it.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that?
That's the toughest thing.
And the way to respond to that, if anyone struggles with that, is definitively you accept and appreciate their compliment. Because even if you thought your show was a piece of shit that day, if they enjoyed it, that's mm-hmm. a statement about them, not you. And you'd be glad that they enjoyed something. Mm-hmm. Even if you didn't, if you disagree, it's still better that they enjoyed your piece of shit show than that they didn't enjoy your piece of shit show. So
regardless, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Their opinion is always, whether good or bad, it's always,
valid.
Valid, but it's their thought process, and you can't take it personally, I think, regardless.
It's good or bad.
I tweeted about this or put it on the Facebooks, and it's amazing how much this resonated with so many people. And I put it up as a joke, but a lot of people, I think, thought it was serious. I literally because it was something that actually happened, but I didn't take it seriously.
Yeah.
Walked off stage to an amazing crowd, cheering, whistling from Comedy Magic. I sit down in the green room, pull up my phone, see that I got an email from YouTube.
Mm.
It's a comment from somebody that said, "This show is bullshit. This is for kids. Why is he at the Magic Castle?"
That's funny.
And it's just the timing of that is just hilarious. It was so great. And I put it up on Facebook and I said, the universe works in mysterious ways.
Mm.
And a lot of people felt the need to like, "Oh, it's okay, man. I love your stuff." I'm like, funny. No, I didn't. I wasn't trying for, a love fest here, but thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people don't realize that the shitty things are part of it. That's you can't, if you run or hide from them, you end up. I mean, thinking about the Macau sessions, I keep thinking about, still think about Daryl.
Yeah.
I think that's what, things like that happen when you aren't, there's this pervasive culture that negative things are not okay, that we should hide from them and push them away rather than accepting them. It's part of it. It sucks, but you need to find a way to live with the dark sides of life and shows and humanity and everything while doing what we can to improve it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moment of silence.
Yeah. Oh, so anyway, so we get compliments. They're great. You go, "Thank you. I'm really glad you enjoyed the show." And you get into kind of a loop with that, because if you do enough shows, it happens all the time and you hear the same compliments again and again. And again, you always appreciate them because that's a beautiful
you'd
thing.
Never take it lightly.
Yeah, but they're not very memorable. You don't remember them. But then every now and then you get an interesting compliment, apart from, "Oh, so amazing. I have no idea how it was done," blah, blah, blah. And this was Johann Stahl, with whom I share an equal third prize for Close Up Magic at FISM 2009. That's our weird bond. We tied for that award. and then much later became good friends. And I did a show at 4F at the Fectors Convention in New York. And I was there for the first time attending to check it out. Did a performance in the thing. And, several people went, "Oh, I liked it, whatever." Other people ignored me, having apparently not liked it, whatever. And Johan said, "Hey, I really like your show. It had – he said it's this Swedish word that doesn't translate exactly. He said, "I felt it had pondus." And he explained it's a Swedish word that apparently means having exactly the right amount of energy for the situation, no more, no less. And you see that. You see performers with too much energy. And it's just, calm down, dude. dial it back 20%. Too much. And you see performers who are too low energy, who just don't have enough for the room. But then, apparently this idea in Swedish, pondus, is when you have exactly the perfect amount for the room. And it's a really – it's almost sort of a Zen thing. And that really stuck with me because that was something I didn't realize I was doing. That was not a deliberate thing I was aiming for. But once he pointed that out, it was something I started to think about and kept trying to continually strive to maintain that and to always – and I don't always hit it, right? We don't always do good shows. But it's now something I think about that I know I did that one time accidentally. Yeah. And aiming for.
It's amazing how hitting that right energy and adjusting to what the audience energy is, and just, I think that's why, because I've been analyzing this a lot lately, I still get super nervous for gigs and I don't know why.
Mm.
And something that literally calms me down is I have to tell myself, "You've been doing this for 12 years. you've been decent at it for about two of those years. You're fine. You can do this. Yeah. And it sounds ridiculous to say, but I think a lot of that comes from every show is different because you have to adjust to, okay, what level is this crowd at and what level do I have to be at to get to that safe energy of what you were describing?
Yeah. Way to meet them.
Yeah, so you don't come across as a crazy man or B, somebody who's uninterested in their work.
Well, that's something that I know I'm particularly sensitive to is the roboticism of performers who aren't sensing and feeling the crowd and dynamically
that's
adjusting
so
their performance.
Hard to watch.
And a lot of audiences don't notice it, and that's why some of those performers are still very successful who do exactly the same show every time, no matter what. Mm-hmm. It's more common in stage and box illusion and manipulation and so on, where it's a very tightly rehearsed sequence.
Yeah, where you don't have to necessarily react to what the audience is giving you.
But I also just don't enjoy that. I've done routines like that, particularly in the early days, and I don't enjoy it anymore because it gets repetitive. Mm-hmm. It's just boring to do, even if you can do it brilliantly, but... Let's face it, I mean, one of the reasons I chose this career path is because I wanted to enjoy my life. I want my audiences to enjoy their lives and the shows as well, but I also want to have a good time. And I definitely do not have a good time doing exactly the same performance robotically every single time. So it is that dynamic feeling it out, like a dance or a benevolent fight scene or whatever. Where it's between you and them and figuring it out and finding that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, giving this audience something to naturally react to so you can react honestly in that moment, too. Oh, man, I had another thought. And this is just – so we tentatively, called this – pouring one out for the House of Magic, and then I don't know where else to go from here.
Yeah.
Because we've harped on China and we harped on Macau for 8 episodes.
Yeah,
so
I know.
We don't want to overkill
it. What more has
it.
Been said?
But I
still mean to go. I haven't yet gone back and listened to any of those episodes. It's always tough to listen to yourself. I sort of feel like I should to relive what I was experiencing there.
I edit these and then make sure everything sounds okay and put it out into the universe and try not to listen to it ever again.
Well, what if we do it then? What if we – let's head out and pour one out for the House of Magic.
Pouring one out? Okay, we're going to go outside now.
Go outside and pour out a beer.
On my roof.
In memory, on Nick's roof,
Let's just preface. We were going to try to do this on a mountain. We're going to try to do this literally, like without exaggeration. Yeah. You sent me the location of a mountain, and I said, that's too far.
See, I think that shows our respective levels of dedication to the bit. But I actually want to do this. I think it's important to do. It was a big part of our lives. It's gone. This is a ritual that we do. Going to pour out a beer for the House of Magic.
Pour out some beer. Stay tuned.
Let's go find a roof.
All right, we are now... outside on a mountaintop / parking garage in LA.
Nick's roof. We've the LA skyline in the distance. We're looking out over the city.
We were going to do the whole thing from up here, but as you'll probably hear in a moment, there's lots of airplanes going past.
There's a lot of ambient noise. And we're here to pour one out for the House of Magic. For those who don't know, the ritual of pouring one out, to pour a drink onto the ground as though offering it to the spirits of the departed.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like you're offering the drink to the spirits.
A la Snoop Dogg. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's basically drinking or whatever with your departed one.
Good. Well, we both have definitely beer in our hands right now.
So us to the House of Magic.
Cheers.
And...
let's get this in. There you go. There you go. That sounds good as it gets all over my feet.
There you go, House of Magic. We miss you.
Miss you. Rest in peace.
You gave us so much.
Long live great audiences.
Thank you for listening to Two Magicians, One Mic podcast. Please rate us on iTunes. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Visit our website, www.twomagiciansonemic.com. Send fan mail or hate mail to twomagiciansonemic@gmail.com. Have a great week.